This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, tonight is the big night for Hillary Clinton in Philadelphia as she speaks on the closing night of the Democratic Convention. Last night, President Obama, among others, extolled the virtues of Hillary Clinton as the next commander-in-chief. Well, does her record suggest she has what it takes to be the next commander-in-chief? A member of the House Armed Services Committee, Arizona Congressman Trent Franks, will help us answer that question in just a moment. And we should not be surprised that after the Democrats voted God out of their platform 4 years ago, that religious freedom would be far behind. The live and let live facade is beginning to fall away, revealing the true agenda of homosexual activists. Jamie Dean, a reporter with World Magazine, sat in on a meeting in Philadelphia where activists made clear gay rights trumps religious freedom. We'll talk about that here on Washington Watch. Also, as the presidential field has taken its final shape, George Varna joins us with a look at where conservative Christians are headed, if anywhere. We're going to talk about that. And a little later, we'll open up the phone lines to see where you are headed in this 2016 presidential election. That's a little bit later when we open up the phone lines here on Washington Watch on this Thursday afternoon. The website is TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics, also information about the Values Voters Summit coming up September the 9th and the 10th. You can be a part of it. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and find out how. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. As I mentioned, last night it was President Obama's turn to speak at this year's Democratic National Convention. And I tell you, it almost seemed to be over the top, his praise for Hillary Clinton, stating, quote, "I can say with confidence that there has never been a man or woman, not me, not Bill, nobody more qualified than Hillary Clinton to serve as president of the United States of America." And we didn't stop there. He went on to tout her as a foreign policy expert. Quote, "Hillary Clinton is respected around the world, not just by leaders, but by the people they serve. And she has the judgment, the experience, and the temperament to meet the threat from terrorism," end quote. But it was former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta who spoke that I thought, I cannot believe these people are actually speaking these words. But here's what he said. Quote, "I can say this, that in this election, there is only one candidate for president who has the experience, the temperament, and the judgment to be commander-in-chief, and that is Hillary Clinton." Of course, that sounds very similar to what the president just said. Continuing his quote, "This is no time. This is no time to gamble with our future. America faces flashpoints and threats from around the globe, and we need a president who is strong and smart and courageous, who enters the Oval Office with the respect of the generals and admirals who lead the military, with the confidence of diplomats who represent America, and with the trust of our troops who know that she will always have their back," end quote. I was sitting there in amazement that he actually spoke those words. Really. That diplomats have confidence in her leadership, that the troops know that she has their back. Really. Well, joining me now is a member of the House Armed Services Committee. He represents the 8th Congressional District of Arizona, our good friend Congressman Trent Franks. Trent, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to be with you, Mr. Tony.
Well, let me ask you point blank, Congressman, are you confident that Hillary Clinton has what it takes to be commander-in-chief?
Well, Tony, I'm sure that in this partisan environment that anything I say is suspect. But I can say to you from the bottom of my heart, I think she is distinctly unqualified to be commander-in-chief, because if there's anything that commander-in-chief has to have, that is the respect and the confidence of the troops, those who are on the front line putting themselves at risk for all of us. And Mrs. Clinton has completely vitiated that with her performance as Secretary of State. And I would just dare anyone that questions that to go and do a poll among military individuals just to see what their perspective on it is. I think it'll make it very clear to everybody.
I was amazed as I sat and listened to Leon Panetta make that statement that no one would walk into the Oval Office with the respect of generals and admirals who lead the military, and I'm quoting, "with the confidence of diplomats who represent America and with the trust of our troops who know that she will always have their back. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, Benghazi is flashing there in mind, and I'm sure most Americans are saying, wait a minute, this is inconsistent with her track record.
Well, you know, probably one of the most shocking things that I have learned in the 14 years I've been in Congress, I guess it would be twofold. One, that in general, our friends on the left have dismissed the truth as even a factor in the debate. There's no longer any reference to it. There's no longer any loyalty to it. The truth itself, the factual information, empirical reality, is completely shut out of the process. But the second thing is the profoundly, obviously false things they will say with a straight face. That's the hardest thing. Sometimes I think the room, the furniture is going to start floating in the room when they talk, because it's just completely surreal. The notion that the average soldier thinks Hillary Clinton has their back, I mean, if that's true, I'm a cross-eyed astronaut. There's one thing that they do know, and that is that they would be at a distinct disadvantage for her to be as the President of the United States, as the Commander-in-Chief, because they are convinced that she doesn't have their back.
Well, I mean, is it not reasonable to believe that if she were Commander-in-Chief, that we will see yet more social engineering in our military, that it'll continue to be a laboratory for their social experiments rather than being a fighting force that is prepared, equipped to defend America and our allies?
Tony, I've been on the Armed Services Committee for 14 years, and I can say with great conviction that most of the big battles that we've had with the Democrats on that committee have not been over the critical nature of how our armed forces will be equipped and supported, or how our foreign policy will be shaped, but it's over the incessant, constant, proactive effort they have to turn the military into a left-wing socialist experiment.
When you look at
the main battles we've had with them.
Without question, and I think it's left us more vulnerable as a nation. I think it has left the world in upheaval. I mean, we're seeing what's happening in Europe and the Middle East. I think it is directly linked, maybe indirectly, but it's clearly connected to our lack of military strength and seriousness, because we're more interested in advancing this radical social agenda than we are building a fighting force that can keep America safe and secure. But when you look at the issues before us as a nation, and you have a front row seat, I mean, you're actually in the arena on these issues, especially on the House Armed Services Committee, what is it that factors at the top of your list, the top one, two, three issues as you consider what to do in this upcoming election? What are those issues?
Well, Tony, you know, I have the privilege of chairing the Constitution Subcommittee in the Congress, which I believe to be so foundational to everything else we do, because the Constitution and our adherence to it has made us the unipolar superpower of the world, because we were willing to not only support and protect the constitutional rights of everyday Americans, but we were willing to protect that against outside invaders, and it gave us tremendous productivity. So I first believe that the first thing we have to do is secure the republic, because I believe that if Hillary Clinton is the next president, that she will appoint Supreme Court justices that will fundamentally abrogate the United States Constitution. It will be gone for a generation or more. I could stop there, but also we won't have a market economy. A government will be the primary director of all productivity in this country, or lack thereof. And ultimately, we will be a weak nation across the world, and our enemies will look at us and they'll say, now America neither has the capacity nor the intent to stand up for what they believe or stand up for who they are, and it will invite aggression, and that the world that is now on fire will be completely engulfed in flames.
Well, I mean, clearly, you know, the Constitution is, I mean, that is that's at the core of who we are as a people. And it is the agreement by which the people agree to be governed. It sets out the priority, the role of the government. And I would say without hesitation, this administration has trampled upon it. They're not unique. Others have as well. It's been tested and abused over the years, but nothing like what we've seen in the last 7.5 years. But let's talk about.
I don't want to cut across you, Tony, but this administration, I realize there's been some abuses toward the Constitution in this past, but this president has done for constitutional abuse what Stonehenge did for rocks. I mean, he has absolutely been the worst offender we've ever had in the White House. He completely has betrayed his oath of office to preserve and protect this Constitution.
So, that said, is there any... I'm looking for the right words here because I want to be very precise in how I say that. Given what this administration has done, and that Hillary Clinton has been a part of this administration, and the praise that he has heaped upon her, is there any thought that she would not continue that same abuse of the Constitution that we've seen?
I think that one of the preeminent core overtones of the president's speech, President Obama's speech at the convention, was that she would be a third Obama term. And so the answer to your question is absolutely not. She would continue on his policies because, I, for one, I'm not sure she has the imagination to figure out new ones. But certainly she has always embraced the typical left-wing line. And so, yes, she will continue his policies completely. But more than that, I know that every politician who's ever talked before an election says this is the most important election we've ever had. But, Tony, if Hillary Clinton is elected, this country will not be recognizable after she's through. And sometimes, you know, they say we're at a crossroads. We're not at a crossroads. We were at a crossroads when we were thinking about electing Barack Obama. We took the wrong fork, and now we are in the wilderness. And if we don't claw ourselves across the abyss and somehow get back on the right road, our children will grow up in not only the shadow of nuclear terrorism, but where the Constitution is no longer the guarantor, at least the human guarantor, of their rights. And it will be something that will be a tragedy that this generation broke the chain of a long line of those who stood for liberty and passed on this republic to their next generation.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona, my guest, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, where discussing the remarks last night made, the theme apparently promoting Hillary Clinton as a commander-in-chief. There were a number of people speaking to that aspect last night, and quite frankly, I was shocked that people would actually say those things because the evidence suggests otherwise. Trent, I want to we're about out of time, but there are some Christians who, you know, they don't like how this election has shaped up. And they don't like the choices before them, and they're thinking about not staying, not voting, and rather just staying at home. What would you say to them?
Well, Tony, I know that some of us don't all, you know what Mr. Trump will do as the president. But I would suggest to you, we do know what Hillary Clinton will do as president. This is a binary decision. And anything that we do that weakens Mr. Trump's ability to defeat Hillary Clinton is something that is going to be an absolute crushing blow to our children and future generations. So any Christian, anyone that has any sort of conservative or any traditional notion of what this country is all about had better do everything they possibly can to elect Mr. Trump over Hillary Clinton. He wasn't my first choice either, but now he is absolutely the only choice for reasonable people. The country is at stake.
All right, I got to leave it there. Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona, thanks so much for joining us on this Thursday afternoon.
God bless you, Tony. Take care.
All right. Our good friend, Congressman Trent Franks. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, not only is God gone from the Democratic platform, but, yep, religious liberty, that's gone too. Don't go away.
It was a time when men rebuilt the ruins and held spears, shields, and bows. With one hand, they laid bricks. With the other, they held a weapon. Jerusalem had been destroyed by enemies that moved in after Judah was taken into captivity. Nehemiah said, "You see the distress we're in? Let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach." The people said, "Let us rise up and build," and set their hands to the good work. Our nation, after many years of decline, is in a state of moral destruction. The cry is going out, "Do you see the distress we're in? Rise up and build." To restore the moral foundations of America, an army of citizens must set their hands to a good work and be ready to fight. The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. AFA.net.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state of South Carolina. 16,000 homes had flood damage, and now you and I get a chance to bless them as they wait for somebody to come and help rebuild their homes. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. We expect thousands of volunteers from around the country to come to that beautiful state. You can come for 3 days. You can come for all 8 days. We love families. We need roofers and electricians and plumbers and carpenters. And we need people like me that are less skilled, but just are excited to serve somebody in need. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. Hope to see you there.
The trip is October 8th through 15th. Volunteer for a minimum of 3 days at 8daysofhope.com. And if you'd like to help but are not able to go, financial donations are also needed. Sign up or give at 8daysofhope.com.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. 4 years ago, the Democrats voted God out of their platform. You might remember seeing that, all the ruckus, and pretty intense. Well, it should come as no surprise that religious liberty is not something defended or promoted in their platform. And there is a reason. There are those who are now quickly becoming the base of the Democratic Party, the abortion crowd, and the LGBT crowd. They are actively working to ensure that religious liberty is not only not in the Democratic platform, but they actually want it removed from America. Joining me now to highlight an article she published today, entitled LGBT Groups Celebrate Withering Religious Liberty in Philadelphia, a national editor for World Magazine, Jamie Dean. Jamie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here.
Now, Jamie, you've been reporting live from the Democratic National Convention there in Philadelphia, have you not?
I have. It's been a long week.
Yeah. Now, were you at the Republican Convention last week?
Yes, it was. I should say it's been a long 2 weeks. I started last Monday covering the RNC and then came over to Philadelphia to cover the DNC.
Now, not to talk anything about content, okay, so this is just a question about logistics. How do you compare the two conventions and how they were executed?
You know, I mean, I think that a lot of people have said that Philadelphia is definitely the more difficult convention to navigate. I mean, just the city itself is spread out, so going from, for example, the convention center to the arena where the convention is held is really quite a feat to do that and to go back and forth. And there's been a lot of gridlock in the streets, and it has been very logistically challenging. I think Cleveland was just a lot easier, both for delegates and media, to navigate, just based on what I personally saw. I will say that the crowds at the center here in Philadelphia seemed to be a little bit more robust. I mean, the first night that I went into the arena, a couple of hours before Bernie Sanders came on, I had a press pass and I couldn't get into the stands. It was already that full. They said, sorry, we don't have any more seats, even if you have a ticket. And that was not a problem in Cleveland. So I don't know what you can attribute that to, if it's the size of the arena or the size of the crowds, but it's definitely a little bit more hectic and a little bit more bustling here, I would say.
Mm. Well, that's good. Good to know. It's a huge undertaking to put together an event like this, and I have to say, I think the Republicans did an outstanding job in the logistics of their event. But now I want to move into kind of the content. You were a part of a meeting that was not actually a part of the Democratic convention, but kind of parallel to it. But some of the key constituencies. And it's being, you know, there was this idea of live and let live at one point, at least that's what we were told when it came to the redefinition of natural marriage. But that doesn't seem to be the emphasis now coming from those who have succeeded in redefining marriage.
It really doesn't. I mean, it was almost an alarming meeting to be a part of. In some ways, it wasn't surprising, but in other ways, it was sort of an inside look at what some of really the leading thinkers in the gay rights movement have done and what they're planning to do in the future. This was specifically a meeting of the Equality Forum, and they intentionally held it this week in Philadelphia so that it could be, as you said, parallel with the Democratic convention, and so lots of people from the convention were coming in, and some of the congressmen, or at least one congressman, came in and was part of this. So it was very much, I think, in tandem with the convention. And you had people from GLAAD, you had people from the ACLU, from the Gill Foundation, as I mentioned, a congressman from Colorado. And they were really outlining their vision for the future. And if I could just summarize their vision for the future, it's that they write Trump religious freedom. One audience member put the question very directly. Does someone's religion trump my freedom? And the ACLU lawyer said very clearly, no, it does not. And in fact, it was interesting because there was a Colorado senator, Jared Polis, who was openly gay, and he seemed to be kind of suggesting that maybe there is some middle ground. I mean, they were talking about the cases where florists don't want to provide flowers for a gay wedding, or bakers don't want to make a cake for a gay wedding. And he didn't exactly say there's a compromise, but you could tell he was grappling with the issue of conscience for religious people. And an advocate from the Gill Foundation just kind of stepped into what he was saying. So just a moment, I want to make sure that we're not suggesting that there's any kind of balance between equality and religious liberty. I mean, it was just that fine of a point on it. So I think that was pretty chilling to hear them just say, no, there is no exception, and there's going to be no exception, and we're going to fight that tooth and nail.
Now, to be clear, when a question such as does someone's religious or religious freedom trump their sexual freedom, and the answer to that question was resoundingly no in that crowd, what we're talking about here is not someone's religious belief prohibiting them from being married or prohibiting them from doing whatever they do. What they're talking about in that context is that person with religious conviction being able to not be a party to what they're doing. For instance, you mentioned the florist and the baker. So that's the context in which they're talking about religious freedom, correct?
That's absolutely the context. And they kept saying, someone is free to believe anything they want. I mean, they couched their vision of religious liberty strictly within the realm of belief. You're free to believe what you want, but as soon as it treads on the way I want to live, then the conflict is over, and religious liberty loses in that case. And I think some of them were even acknowledging that, to some degree, that we're not talking about bakers that just say, I will never bake a cake for a gay person. They're just saying, I don't want to participate in a wedding. I mean, we know that the florist in Washington had served that gay customer for years, had given him flowers for years, and she just didn't want to do the wedding. And they were acknowledging that, but still saying, still, no exceptions. This is the law. This is their view of the law, and they were going to just kind of put the hammer down, despite the really sweeping victories they've seen with gay marriage being legal and all of these things.
Right.
Clear message with no exception.
Right, and you made clear in your article that they've said that they haven't even really gotten started. They've got a lot more to do. Jamie, we're up against a break. I want to thank you. Eye-opening article. I'm going to encourage people to read it. In fact, I've linked to it in my daily update I'm sending out today. So thanks so much for joining us, Jamie.
Thank you, Tony.
Jamie Dean with World Magazine. Highly recommend this article. Very revealing. Take a look, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, George Barna is here with us. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, Federal Reserve finally came out with their thoughts about raising interest rates. The thoughts are, of course, they're not raising interest rates now, but they sounded very dovish. Typically, the markets like that. And she did seem to indicate that September rate hike was not out of the realm of possibility. Now, I think that she is running that up the flagpole, see what happens today and tomorrow with that kind of statement. She said the near-term risk of the economic outlook have diminished. Now, she didn't go into great detail as to what exactly those near-term risks were that have diminished so greatly. I certainly don't know what they are, but she indicated that they have diminished, indicating that September is not out of the realm of possibility for a rate hike. Now, if she wants to prove that the Federal Reserve has not been politicized, then September would be perfectly okay for her to raise rates. But the likelihood of that are very, very slim. And I think we're still going to see a huge amount of slack in the labor market. And again, the underlying fundamentals of the economy are not going to be, as she said last week, overwhelmingly supportive of a Fed hike. Not to mention that the dollar has been raising in value. And in the last 3 weeks, it is up 3.8%. This is hurting commodities, oil in particular, but gold liked the thought of higher rates, and they are rallying on the news.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and I am Tony Perkins, and I'm glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, let me remind you once again, coming up September the 9th and 10th in Washington, D.C., the Values Voter Summit. You can be a part of it. Great lineup of speakers, more to come. I can't tell you everybody that's going to be there, but there's going to be some folks you want to see. TonyPerkins.com. Find out more. All right. New polling out yesterday from the American Culture and Faith Institute shows just how important the what we call SAGE cons, that's the spiritually active, governance engaged conservatives, are in this presidential election. We know they're important, but how important and what are they going to do? Well, among this group, as of now, 76% currently plan to vote for Donald Trump. Less than 1% expect to support Hillary Clinton. Among the theologically conservative Protestant pastors interviewed, a similar proportion, 70% say they would vote for Donald Trump, where a mere 2% would vote for Hillary Clinton. That still leaves about 23% of these conservative Christians who are engaged in the process, who generally vote in high number, high percentages, not decided what they're going to do, what's going to happen with them. Well, joining us to talk about that is the executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute and founder of Barna Research Group, George Barna. George, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
Interesting. I looked at the numbers. Help us put that in context with past elections. What does this tell us? We're talking about these are conservative Christians who are actively engaged. So these guys generally, guys, gals, they generally vote in high proportions, correct?
Yes, they're usually one of the highest voting, highest turnout segments in any given election. But, you know, when you look at the numbers that right now say they're leaning toward voting for, they're committed to voting for Mr. Trump, 74% sounds really high. It is one of the higher segments that he has in terms of support. But that's probably a good 10 to 15 percentage points lower than that group usually would be in terms of backing the most conservative candidate in any given election.
So where are those candidates? I mean, where are those voters right now?
Well, it's a little bit different when you look at the two different groups that we track. On the one hand, you've got voters overall with 74% behind Trump, 1% behind Clinton. You've got about 13%, one out of every eight of them roughly, who say that they will vote for some other candidate on the ballot. They don't even know the names of those candidates for the most part, but they don't like the two primary choices that are being offered up. You got about another 5% who say they simply will not vote for a presidential candidate. And then you got about 7% who say that they're undecided at this time. It's a little bit different when you look at the theologically conservative pastors across the country. A little bit lower number who say they're going to support Donald Trump, 70%. Only 2% say they would currently support Hillary Clinton. Then you got 12% who say they'll go for another candidate. You've got 12% who say they're undecided. And then you've got 5% who say they won't vote at all.
So let's zero in just a minute on the Sage Cons. That's the spiritually active, governance-engaged, conservative individuals. Those are the ones that are we define as the evangelicals who go to church on a weekly basis, whose faith is important to them. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. There are two things that they put a lot of time and effort into. That would be their faith, first and foremost. But secondly, because of their faith, they know that politics and government is important, that they have a responsibility there. And so their view tends to be, if I'm going to be a good citizen, both of heaven but also of earth, I have to be involved in what's going on in terms of governance.
So this is an important group. They're also influencers, are they not? They influence those around them because people know that they're serious about their faith and they're engaged in the political process, correct?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point because on the one hand, they tend to influence by giving money more generously. They tend to influence by getting involved in campaigns. But some other studies we've done among them show that they're actually less likely to talk about these matters than are other people. And as we probe down to try to figure out why that is, what we discovered is truth matters to this group. So they don't want to just go out there and say whatever comes into their head on the spur of the moment. They want to really understand, first of all, what does the Bible say about these things? And secondly, how do I understand the facts of the situation in our society? And because they're not getting much preaching or teaching at their churches on these issues, they tend to be more silent about them. They have strong opinions themselves. They'll go and they'll vote those opinions. But they're actually less likely to talk about these matters than other people in our culture are.
But they could be triggered to do that if they were properly equipped through the preaching or even through programs like this that helps them connect their faith with the set of facts that they have.
Yeah, not only could they be triggered, they're dying to be triggered. Some of the studies that we've done with them asking about, you know, what would it take to get you more deeply involved and to be discussing things more, they're saying, you know, if somebody would simply take the time to teach me about issues like what difference does the judicial process make? How do I think biblically about the role and the size and the authority of government, my role in that? How do I think about Islam? How do we respond to Islamic aggression and terrorism? All of those things, they want to talk about them, but they want to talk truthfully and knowledgeably about them.
George, we're up against a break, and I've got one more question I want to ask you. Would you mind holding over for 2 minutes and answering that question on the other side of this break?
Yeah, be happy to do it.
All right. I want to ask George about these undecided voters. What is it going to take to make them decided? What are they going to have to do to get engaged? And then I'm going to open up the phone lines and ask you where you are on this decision that you have to make about whether or not to vote in November. Are you undecided? Are you considering staying home in November? If so, why? We're going to talk about that here on Washington Watch when we continue. Don't go away. On the other side of the break, we'll continue and conclude our conversation with George Barna and talk to you.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the President nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the President has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
A quick trip to Aunt Helen's unexpectedly became an extended stay, and you're without enough of your medication. It's good to know you have real-time access to a national network of board-certified doctors with just a phone call. MD Live is non-emergent medical care 24/7, fitting your schedule. No forms to fill out and no waiting room, because all you need is your non-narcotic medication. HCBenefits.com. That's HCBenefits.com.
What are students saying about Wesley Biblical Seminary? Here's Pastor Gary Adams.
I think one of the most valuable things through Wesley has been maturity in faith and spirituality in community as well. It's very difficult to spend time with the Lord and remain the same.
I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come and be a part of our community.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad that you are with us on this Thursday afternoon. In just a bit, we'll open up the phone lines. But first, I want to conclude my conversation here with George Barna, who released a poll yesterday with the American Culture Faith Institute regarding where socially conservative Christians, those who are engaged politically, where they're going in this election. George, thanks for sticking around. This is my question for you. According to your poll, 76% of these sage cons plan to vote for Donald Trump, and I think you said 7% are undecided. Can Donald Trump reach those undecided, and what percentage does he need to have in order to be successful in this election?
Well, you know, can he reach them? It's possible, but frankly, some of that is out of his hands in a way. Because one of the big issues that a lot of the undecideds are wrestling with is which way should they lean? Do they lean toward principle and only vote for the quote-unquote perfect candidate, or do they lean toward pragmatism? In other words, realizing, well, somebody's going to be voted president, and if I don't vote, I've just handed my vote to somebody else to make that choice for me. And so they're trying to weigh those options. Among those who have already decided, you know, it's important to vote, the kinds of things that they're looking at have to do with things like character, leadership capacity, and stands on critical issues. And so they want somebody who's going to be honest, somebody who has a presidential demeanor, somebody who has the courage and the capacity to make tough decisions, to give people a sense of vision for the country and hope that, yes, we can become better than we are now. So those are the things that they're trying to weigh, and so they're gathering more information. I'd say in the end, if Mr. Trump is going to win, he probably needs to jack up his proportion of sage cons by at least 10 percentage points. And if he doesn't do that, it's going to be real hard.
Upwards of 86% of those voters need to be going to Donald Trump is what you're saying.
Right, somewhere in that neighborhood.
You know, frankly, I'm actually surprised that this early in the process, I know it's not early, but it's early, I think, given how long the primary lasted, that 76% of those have already made the decision that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. I actually think it's higher than what I thought it would be.
Well, and to be honest, I mean, that number has jumped pretty significantly in the last 6 to 8 weeks, where it was in the low 60s. But, you know, if you look at it back in late May, and now here we are in late July, and it's in the mid-70s. So, I mean, that's already pretty significant growth. So, I mean, if the trend line continues, he'll be fine.
All right, George Barna, as always, great to take a look at the political landscape by the numbers. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
All right, George Barna there. Fascinating stuff. In fact, you can sign up for this, and he'll send you his research. They do it on a regular basis. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. I just find it fascinating to kind of see where people are at and how they're making their decisions. And, you know, it's interesting to me. I like to look at the numbers. All right, phone lines already filled up, 866-372-7234. And here's the question, are you still undecided? You know, are you one of those, 7%, 10% who have not yet made your decision on what to do in this election? I assume that you all are sage cons. You are socially conservative, actively engaged Christians. I assume that. So have you made up your mind? Are you still undecided? Are you considering staying home in November? If so, why? So I want to know that, give you a chance to answer that question. And we're going to start in West Virginia with Dan. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, first-time caller.
Well, welcome to the show. Glad to have you calling in today.
Thank you, and thank you so much for your show. Yeah, I do consider myself, it's the first time I've heard the anagram, but it's HCON. And I've voted in every election since age 18 when I've been able to. However, for some reason, I feel more strongly about this one than any other one that I've voted in prior. It just feels like there's so much more at stake from a Christian conservative point of view, considering we have the Supreme Court justice, which is vacated. And I'm not saying that I'm happy with my choices that I have, mm-hmm. but I think a choice has to be made. To set that out would just be catastrophic.
May I ask who you've decided to vote for?
Well, between the two, it has to be Trump. It has to be Trump for me. Everybody has to make their own decision, but the other would be 8 years of the same or worse mm-hmm. than Obama under his administration, and I just don't think that we can take that.
So would it be like I've described this even for myself as I kind of personally wrestled through this process, is that this is an analytical head decision, not a heart decision.
Correct. My heart's not with the candidate. I'm sorry. Mr. Yeah. Trump, you know, he has some good ideals. He has some things that I do agree with. But for me, what kind of swung my vote in his direction is that he is a businessman. And good business people can be recognized by who they surround themselves with. And his choice of Pence as a strong conservative, I think, is a very, very good choice, a good business decision for Trump.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Kind of swings my butt in his direction.
Well, Dan, thanks for being a first-time caller. Great to have you listening to Washington Watch, and appreciate the insight there. We're going to hear from some other folks on where they are in this election cycle. In fact, folks, if you happen to be a Hillary voter, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well. If you happen to be scanning the dial and you hear the program and you're a Hillary supporter, I'd love to hear from you as well. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Kansas where Mitt is on the line. Mitt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. Yourself?
Fine. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I'm a sports fan caller. I was wondering, those people that were saying that they needed more information, that I was wondering whether they wanted somebody to talk to in person or how they wanted to get their information.
That's a great question. And I think what George was talking about, and he's done a lot of research on this, it's that Christians, let me rephrase that, those Christians who take their faith very seriously in terms of having what we would call a biblical worldview, meaning that they make their decisions in life based on the principles and teaching of Scripture. They look at the world through the lenses of Scripture. And oftentimes they need help in understanding these issues in the 21st century that are not clearly articulated in Scripture. So they're looking to their pastor, maybe their Sunday school teacher, maybe here to Washington Watch, I hope, to kind of unpack that for them and help them make these decisions. So that's what they're looking for, not looking for a candidate to knock at their door and you know, talk with them about their platform. They're wanting to know, how do I make this decision in light of what Scripture says? And I talked about this a lot in the primary when we looked at, you know, what the Scripture says about who we are to select as our leaders. In Exodus chapter 18, makes very clear the type of individuals we're to look for. Now, when we, you know, of course, we now are like in a funnel because we're now down to where we just have two candidates to choose from as opposed to 20. And so that's kind of the process. And that's where George was saying that people are looking, they're hungry, they're waiting for their pastors to speak to these issues. A lot of pastors feel intimidated, thinking that somebody's going to get upset if they talk about these issues. And of course, there's some that are fearful of the government. You've heard something about the Johnson Amendment. We've talked about that periodically over the years, and Donald Trump making it a centerpiece to his campaign when it comes to evangelicals, eliminating the muzzle that's been placed on churches to speak to political issues. So, Mitt, I think that's what it is. They just want the opportunity to be taught on how to apply their faith in these critical decisions that they have to make as citizens. So, Mitt, thanks so much for being another first-time caller. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. 866-372-7234. We're going to go to Illinois where Cedric is on the line. Cedric, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. As a black man, African American, typically we know African Americans don't vote for Republicans. And if they would actually look at the history, they will be surprised about the Republicans. And then as a Christian, I don't think we talk enough amongst ourselves about that too. I used to be a Democrat until I started looking at people based on the issues and not based on party. And what I, you know, found out, the issues line up more biblically for me, you know, looking, you know, towards the Republican Party. And then also as a small businessman, it is rough trying to, run a business and succeed at that business and, you know, try to make a living out of it. It's been hard, you know, on the Democrats and stuff. And I'm not all about taxes, but, I have made my decision. And also as a prior military individual, I can't deal with the decisions that have been made over Hillary Clinton and the White House and all the stuff that goes along with that. So, you know, even though Trump may not be a person that, you know, I truly want, but he's the best person, I think, for where we at in the nation's history right now.
Well, Cedric, thank you. First off, thanks for your service to our country. But let me just say, I'm going to repeat what you said because I think it's extremely important. And I think this is exactly where Christians should be, is that we're not voting for a party, we're voting for a person. And I will tell you right here now, and I've said it before, and I've actually done it before, but if there's an individual who is a Republican, but they do not stand for the biblical principles that I stand in, and they're advocating for something different, and in fact are specifically stating positions counter to the stated positions of the Republican Party, and I have a choice of a Democrat who is he or she is in line with biblical principles, I'm going to vote for the Democrat. I'm going to vote for the individual. I'm not going to vote for the party tag. And when these, you know, when the party leaves us, well, they've left. And so I think that's absolutely critical, Cedric, that we look at the issues. And then, of course, I think we have the choices are fewer. And it, as you pointed out, not everything that Donald Trump stands for is something we all agree with. But when you analyze the options before us, I mean, you it makes the choice a little bit easier. Or less complicated, I should say. Cedric, thanks so much for calling and sharing your viewpoint. Very important. Grateful for it. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. I wanted to mention something else, and we're going to get to Paul there. Hold on, Paul, in Missouri. But I wanted to mention, because Chelsea Clinton spoke yesterday at the convention. She was at the convention, not speaking to the whole convention. She was speaking to the LGBTQ delegates at the convention yesterday. And she made reference to something that, I've been accused of in the party, in the Republican platform. And I'm going to quote from her. She said, "But I think what I actually found most offensive," referring to what she found most offensive in the GOP platform, "really, again, ties to me as a mom. The open embrace of conversion therapy in the Republican Party platform, in other words, child abuse, to me is the clarion call for all of us to do everything we can to elect my mom and elect Democrats up and down the ticket. Let me tell you what, she lies as much as her dad." That is not open in the platform. It doesn't say that in the platform. Let me read you what's in the platform because I put it in there. I put this in there, okay? I know what it says. Here's what it says. "We support the right of parents to determine the proper medical treatment and therapy for their minor children." Nothing in there about reparative or conversion therapy. "We support the right of parents to consent to the medical treatment for their minor children and urge enactment of legislation that would require parental consent for their daughters to be transported across state lines for abortion." That's what was put in there. You see, the homosexual community is so self-absorbed that everything is about them. Now, if you read that article that we were talking about earlier with Jamie, this is one of their center points of their entire agenda going forward is to ban parents' right to secure therapy for their children if they're sexually confused. What they want to do is they want to lock kids into this. The platform of the Republicans doesn't say anything about reparative or conversion therapy. It says therapy. That's what it talks about. Anyway, sorry we ran out of time. Paul, sorry we didn't get to you. Out of time. Folks, thanks so much for listening. Great to have you a part of Washington Watch. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Sign up for my daily update, and you get even more of this and what you hear on Washington Watch. All right, let me leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.